individually. We will demand that the site triangles will be dedicated as road right-of-way. In other words, as you approach the crossing, we require a site triangle at a certain angle so that an individual can see well the train and the crossing signal and everything. That will become dedicated road right-of-way, which will mean you can't put up a billboard or a building or something that would block the vision of somebody approaching the crossing. New crossings will be installed with signals and gates, and the maintenance responsibility will be the agency. In other words, the DOT is the agency that is issuing the crossing, and they'll be responsible for maintenance. And the board accepted this policy, so hopefully we can do something about crossing that soon.
So you're working with DOT on it?
Oh, yes, indeed. That may have told you how the watch is made instead of the time, but you touched on something I'm very interested in as well.
Kind of the status of land is a litigation. How many acres now are still?
It's the native plain.
Right.
Well, we have roughly 2,000 acres with the equipment. I think it's 770 something in that. And then in Nanana, while we have deep one with Pocatello. And I'm not real sure how many acres there. That's primarily our dock, which is probably smaller than acres, but a very important part of it.
Is there any kind of timetable on that as far as when that's being resolved?
We are resolving it with the Flutens. Right now, I think that we have reached agreement. However, they need some time to be sure that they're satisfied with our proposal. It looks very optimistic to me that we will have that resolved in the big area, in the equipment area. The Nanana one is in court. I'm not sure where that will end up. State is doing that negotiation.
So the equipment will probably be out of court 7.
But maybe
involved. Right.
Yes. Well, we have a deadline of May the 2nd with the equipment. So sometime this month we will have that resolved.
I appreciate the difficulty of managing the fair market value along with the leases and trying to get the market rate on that. And so I'm really interested in just how that all comes down and I appreciate the position, but I can also understand I can understand that. I appreciate where you're at. And it's interesting to force it.
Well, I tell you, the heart of the dispute is the so-called below-ground improvements, which means field, utilities, or whatever a leaseholder puts in. That right now is included, and this is one of the things that's happened to Mount View. This is included in the appraisal of the land for lease. And we've got to work out a more equitable way of handling those kinds of improvements. That would be one major difference. And I think that's possible. It's just going to be a difficult thing to do. We have so many leaseholders we have to work with.
So what's happening is they've done the improvements, and that becomes part of the new
value.
That's how you improve. That's
the current policy.
Representative Albert.
Mr. Turpin, forgive me if I'm asking something you might have talked about while I was gone. The commuter train concept in the Westminster Valley and actually, the Department of Transportation planning about $70 million worth of improvement on the run highway between the Glen and Boniface over the next couple of years. And I'm interested in two things. Number one, are you taking a look at possibly being able to do this thing? And does the Department of Transportation's improvement plan foreclose the rail corridor that you might need for that community?
Answer is, taking the easiest one first, the last question, no, we still have ample right-of-way. There are two problems the commuter trains. And I talked to the mayor of Wasilla, Mayor Knowles. We have met several times on this. I feel very strongly that for a commuter service to function effectively, you must do it with the speed that a commuter demands and also with the equipment that he demands. In other words, the railroad now would require an hour and 15 minutes to run a train from Wasilla into the depot. And then after you get to the depot, the commuter has to have some mechanism of getting to his workstation. And I feel like that is far too long to even consider being a practical solution. The other thing, we don't have the proper equipment for that. We have big old passenger cars that are very inefficient to use and not very satisfactory to the commuter either. Now, for an investment, which I think is a very reasonable investment of about $40 million, we could revamp our tracks, straighten out all of the many bends that we have from that distance into Anchorage. We could build a station at Eagle River where I think we have a tremendous need for commuter service, and there's no way now to offer that to Eagle River residents. And we could buy commuter cars, or at least a train that is designed for a high-volume passenger load. And we can reduce the travel time from Matanuska Valley into the depot to 45 minutes. Eagle River into the depot of maybe 20 minutes. Now, if we put in those facilities, I think commuter service would be very well accepted and would take a lot of the load off of the highway. So I've taken a position, fine, we'll work with you, but I'm not going to work with you until we get a project that will have a chance of succeeding.
Have you considered bootstrapping it so that the Eagle River port comes first and maybe make a few bucks off of that?
Well, the big expense is, and the problem is, providing a terminal. There's no terminal in Eagle River. So that's one of the things I think we need.
Well, I remember a study, if I may, just continue for a moment, Madam Chairman. I remember a study done several years ago that talked about putting a terminal in the Palmer and the Eagle River area of Wasilla. And I don't know, I'm not sure that people expect very much. I mean, you're supposed to park your car and the place to get the ticket and stay out of the rain. We don't need to build a rain center station, so I don't know if the terminal cost should be a substantial factor.
Well, you've got to have access to your terminal. That's one of the big things. You've got to have a road into it, and you have to have a parking lot. And then a very simple station.
How much do you think the docking cost for the terminal?
I really just have no idea. I don't know what the road cost would be. Now, the equipment, again, are very interested in something like that. So it might be possible to work out some kind of arrangement where they would provide that with some kind of payback for them.
At least they were planned.
Most of it now is just the talk by the various mayors.
Okay. Just want to know if I can get some kind of a response to this Healy Cemetery thing, because it's been going on and on and on and on. Okay.
Right, Dick Schultz.
Okay. The other thing, okay. The grain cars, you mentioned the grain cars are illegal.
Yes, sir. Do you understand what I mean by that?
If DNR or some farmers had some grain they wanted to haul down the sewer or wherever,
well, they're okay as long as DNR owns them. The owner of a car can paint anything that he wants to on the side of his car. These cars have a very beautiful blue background and a yellow green sack that says Alaska Feeds the World or something like that, the green. Now, that's considered billboard, and a railroad can't own a car that advertises anything. Railroads used to sell advertisement on their box cars, and that was a way of increasing the income of the railroad, and I guess the billboard lobby or somebody got that ruled out. So railroads themselves can't do any advertising on their equipment. The owner can do that. So that car is legal as long as the DNR owns it.
Does DNR own those?
They own that, yes.
Then the other thing, railroad ties.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Where's that? And I understand there's a letter that went forth the other day pertaining to railroad ties. are you going to go ahead with that, or?
Oh yes, we'll go ahead with it. We have to start installing the ties. I met with Steve Seeley, who's head of Wrangell Forest Product. I guess he was circulating around here about a week ago. And we have accepted his product as hardwood ties. We can use some of old growth hemlock, it's called, which is a very, very good hard hemlock tie. We can accept that. The company that got the bid, Pacific Lumber and Supply, I believe it's the name of it, can only provide half of the ties anyway. So they're very acceptable to taking product from him as part of their order for the hardwood ties. And that satisfies his capacity, that much of the order. So for the present time, we have the softwood ties are coming from a supplier in Seattle, and the hardwood ties are coming, half of those are coming from Wrangell, half of them from somewhere in the lower 48, but we utilize the full capacity of the Wrangell mill in just that order, so I understand.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I just had a chance to meet you this person this year, and but last year your name, the year before that, your name jumped to the forefront quite often, and it had to do with the legislative paper. And I was wondering,
I was president of the Chamber of Commerce.
Right. And I was wondering, there is a bill that's being presented in the legislature. I don't know who it is, Ferguson or something else. For sure, that's one. Anyway, it says that, that the state, or no state employee, or no employee that works for the state, receives funds for the state or whatever, will receive or can be paid any more than the governor. I was just wondering if you supported that resolution.
I'll tell you a little bit of one of the little asides on that one. The state of Washington, I think, has that kind of legislation they did have. And if you recall the Whoops project, it was a rather significant thing. And the man that was running the Whoops project, making very critical decisions as to whether it should proceed or not proceed, was being paid $48,000 a year because that was less than the government was making. And I think that the state of Washington probably regrets that now and try to get somebody in there that can make the proper decision. I don't think that the state of Alaska should limit itself to that type of a situation where it can't afford it for people into unrealistic pay levels into a non-critical job. It would be my position.
Which I kind of foresee or see the legislature doing the same situation. If we had 120 days out.
I guess I'll have to take just a moment and comment on the Chamber of Commerce's position. That was not because of the pay level. That didn't bother the Chamber of Commerce at all. It was the fact they were trying to keep the legislature a citizens' legislature, trying to minimize the attractiveness of having the legislature be a full-time legislature. Now, whether that's right or wrong, people argue both sides of it. The intent of the Constitution, the people who set up the legislature, was to have a citizens' legislature for Alaska. And maybe they were a little bit out of tune at the time, and that's not a practical way to run the state. But nevertheless, that was the intent. The chamber was taking the position that they preferred that type of a legislature.
If I may just comment, I think everyone would like that, and everyone wants to serve the legislature. But the problem is that, you know, the districts are so huge and so vast that when a person goes back home after the 120 days, you've still got, you know, if you're representing 27 communities, those people expect to see you sometime throughout that year. In their community, holding meetings, finding out what their needs, wants, desires are, etc. And so it becomes a full-time job rather than a job like other people. If I was a farmer and I went back and could go back to the farm and didn't have to worry about that, you know, that's one thing. But when it becomes a full-time job, it takes away from your earning power. In fact, it takes away from me as just being a businessman. because if I could be there and manage my business, I could certainly make my profits more as a result of being there, but I can't be there. And
I can be sympathetic to that. I have to appear in Juneau maybe two or three times a year, and that cuts into the time I'd like to use for other things. Mm-hmm. And I don't have nearly the problem using it.
Representative Davis?
Thank you. I think the legislature took a lot of time with the Rocky Road bill last year, and one of the messages that came out loud and strong was they weren't relevant than the other, not the legislature, and they dictate policies and how much that they were going to try. Everything I've been trying to do, I get the money with the favorites, and it may be a little bit ironic that you were chairman of the chamber, but I think a lot of the opposition from the chamber is a lot with perhaps what you're saying is the full-time legislature versus part-time legislature. But I think part of it has to do with the method that the pay raise came, how that sort of surfaced and went through the legislature as much as, and that's the opposition method from my people I talked to back home. Not so much that maybe they can be paid more than what they were being paid, but the method of the pay raise came in, and I think that's what caused a lot of the people to the opposition. I have to put my two cents in on this too.
I like to put my two cents in too. I think when this was in the spirit of the Chamber of Commerce, he didn't have any idea he had the job right now in the act.
No, I would agree with that.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Stewart?
I believe that there the projections and things that we're looking at, if they become a reality or anything else, I think that they're very good to have a job.
Thank you, sir. Our goal is to not come down and ask you for money to run the railroad and at the same time build it up into a first-class operating facility. It's a stretch goal, but then I said that.
Are there any further questions? Well, Mr. Griffin and Mr. Better, very, very happy to have you down. Very happy that you came so early in the morning without your breakfast. To be able to, I will apologize to the two members of the committee that are not here. And, yeah, Margo would have liked to be here for a few minutes, but he was busy attending to a deity situation.
And I have to ask if we could have copies of the slides.
Yes,
yeah, do we? My staff can handle that.
Let's see, Steve has a copy of the 3-year plan. Yeah. So we brought some copies down in the event you might like to have it. You recognize a plan like that is you end up with a pile of documents, and we've summarized it. And we have it here somewhere.
Well, the reports we've been getting back from Steve, and he's been monitoring the railroad for us, as you know, we have been pleased with you. If we can get you to procure anything available that's the last available, I will be real happy on that one.
Well, I'm very much in favor of that, and I guess as I explained to you earlier, is federal procurement just doesn't have that in it. It's an area that we put a more priority on than we could have. Now,
what can you do with that millions of dollars of inventory?
Well, what we'll do is just not buy anything and use it up. And stuff that we haven't used since 1966, we'll sell at the best price we
can. That's right.
Yeah, we'll just have to surplus it. It's ridiculous to have $12 million worth of inventory. Any businessman would know that.
Well, yeah, I know that.
And you don't have anything to it.
Oh, excuse me. The meeting will be adjourned.